Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Residents in Lakeside are speaking out over the placement of 5 sex offenders in a home in their neighborhood, done without notification to the community. Learn more on today's show. El Cajon's mayor and city manager are voicing concerns over the county putting homeless people from across East County into motels in their city without consulting city officials. Now crime and drug use in the vicinity are on the rise, the city says, but the county is standing by its actions. Families who lost homes and suffered other damage in the Border 32 fire that ravaged Ulzura, Potrero, and Barrett Junction have set up GoFundMe sites seeking help from community members to rebuild their lives. And we'll have details on how you can help on today's show. A mobile farmer's market is coming to Lemon Grove, and in La Mesa, the city has set up a do-it-yourself bicycle repair station for residents. From Public News Service, we'll have some national news stories on today's show, including the Biden administration helping to reach an agreement to prevent a rail strike, as well as speaking out against hate. From California News Service, learn why a proposed bill to fast-track approval of energy projects is facing mounting opposition. On the second half of our show today, our very special newsmaker interview is with Christina Licio, a former La Mesa council member who is running for mayor, challenging incumbent Mayor Mark Arapostathis. The county has approved agricultural passes to help farmers and ranchers gain access to care for their livestock and crops during emergencies such as wildfires, once authorities determine it's safe for them to re-enter an evacuated area. And finally, we'll have some fall planting tips for you today from Master Gardener Connie Beck on Ready, Set, Grow. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Neighbors on Blossom Valley Road in Lakeside held a rally on September 12th to protest the secret placement of 5 sex offenders in their neighborhood. Around 100 residents expressed surprise, fear, and outrage upon learning that 5 sex offenders had been placed all in one home without any notification to neighbors. The offenders' crimes range from indecent exposure to child molestation and rape. Erica Rosser, mother of a 3-year-old, helped organize the protest. She says their community of 18 homes has 21 children under age 16. And that their whole world got turned upside down by the news. The Homeowners Association was also in the dark. A board member told East County Magazine that the HOA was never notified until their president searched the state's registry of sex offenders established under Megan's Law and discovered that the sex offenders were recently placed in the area. Megan's Law is named after 7-year-old Megan Conca, a New Jersey girl who was raped and killed by a registered sex offender who moved across the street from her family without their knowledge. Becky, a grandmother, says she wants something done to oust the sex offenders before another law has to be named after a victim of a crime, such as Megan's Law or Chelsea's Law. Chelsea's Law was named after Chelsea King, a 17-year-old Poway High School student who was found murdered after going for a run in a park in 2010. The convicted sex offender who killed her also confessed to murdering Amber Dubois, a missing Escondido teenager. Becky's grandchildren live only 5 houses from the address where the sex offenders are located. Tiffany Nothwang, who has 2 young daughters, said putting sex offenders into a community with so many children is like sitting an alcoholic on top of a bar. She asks, why are we not questioning as a community why these offenders have so much more rights than families and children? Our children's lives matter. One homeowner objected to the state paying $5,000 or more a month to house sex offenders here. She countered, I don't get free rent, and I haven't broken any laws. She objects to the owner profiting off the home with taxpayer dollars. She is also concerned over a revolving door potential, noting that one offender already moved out and has been replaced with another. The property recently changed hands. It is now owned by Mountain High Construction, an LLC listed in Wyoming. Erica Rosser says when she contacted the manager, her communications were blocked. Paul Rosser is a first responder. He asks, "Who's going to protect my family when I'm gone 2, 3, 4 nights a week?" The community has started social media accounts to fight the placement of sex offenders in their community, including a Facebook page called Keep Lakeside Kids Safe and an Instagram account titled Protect Lakeside. It's questionable whether the placements are legal. Jessica's Law, which voters passed as Proposition 83 in 2006, creates predator-free zones. It prohibits registered sex offenders in California from living within 2,000 feet of any school or park where children gather. For certain high-risk offenders, the required distance is increased to 2,640 feet. Residents say there is a community park only a few houses away from where the sex offenders live. Megan's Law was enacted in 1996. The law requires the California Department of Justice to notify the public about certain registered sex offenders. The DOJ does this via the Megan's Law website that the public can search, though some believe this is not adequate notification. Megan's Law also states that two or more registered sex offenders can live together only if they are related by blood, marriage, or adoption. Yet, the Lakeside home has 5 offenders at one address. The community plans to host more protests in the future as they stand together and fight to protect their children. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
El Cajon's mayor and city manager are speaking out to voice concerns over impacts of the county placing homeless people into 6 motels under a voucher program. In a press conference on September 14th, Mayor Buell said, "It's very frustrating that the county never bothered to let us know about using of El Cajon's motels as homeless shelters." He calls the situation an emergency. In a press release, City Manager Graham Mitchell says the city found out that its motels were being used as temporary homeless shelters only after noticing an increase in crime and medical calls for help around the motels, where police officers started noticing new homeless individuals, drug dealers who prey on them, and open drug use. The vouchers, mostly supplied by a county contractor called Equison Public Consulting Group, allow a homeless person to stay for 28 days, and then they're transported by the county to another hotel for 28 days. According to a survey conducted by the city recently, the Travelodge is at capacity with 100% homeless individuals, as well as Relax Inn and Suite, a few blocks away, that is also full. 5 other motels had an increased voucher occupancy as well. The city manager visited the Travelodge motel Tuesday morning to witness what was occurring. He says he saw a motel tenant with a rolled dollar bill to snort drugs and another man who appeared about to pass out from suspected fentanyl use. Mitchell says he was ready to call 911 when a drug dealer cursed at him and threatened to beat him up if he didn't leave. Mitchell asks, "Why is the county dropping off these community members without any protection?" He adds that a fire safety inspector earlier this week found that 60% of the rooms in one motel being used as a shelter had no operating smoke detectors. Some had unsafe propane stoves, as well as many living in deplorable conditions. Mayor Wells says he supports assistance for those in need, but adds that the county action blindsided him and his staff. "Why aren't they housed in Del Mar or La Jolla?" he says of the homeless in the voucher program. Now, El Cajon has spent substantial sums on helping homeless people in its community, unlike some other cities in the area. Mayor Wells personally headlined a recent concert at the Magnolia Theater to benefit people transitioning out of homelessness at the East County Transitional Living Center. That facility requires residents to be drug-free and sober. The city supports other programs to help the homeless, including recently authorizing construction of tiny homes by a church that will house homeless women. Mayor Wells says his frustration is not with the voucher program, but rather with the lack of voucher distribution countywide. He notes that neighboring cities of Lemon Grove and La Mesa don't have any motels participating in the voucher program. The county recently shut down a homeless encampment on Magnolia, just outside the city limits, and converted the site into a safe parking area for people living in vehicles. But the mayor says those 60 or so people displaced from the Magnolia camp are not enough to account for the surge in El Cajon motel vouchers. Plus, that camp was on unincorporated county land, not the city's. He asks, why bring all the homeless people to El Cajon? The county fired back in a press release issued jointly by Supervisors Joel Anderson and Nathan Fletcher shortly after the mayor's press conference. Chair Fletcher says the Board of Supervisors is taking action in a bipartisan way to do the difficult work of getting people off the streets and into permanent housing. He accuses Mayor Wells and the city of El Cajon of wanting to push homeless people back onto the streets, adding, "We stand ready to work with anyone who is willing to do the tough work to get people off the streets, but will not be deterred or distracted by those trying to drag us backwards." Supervisor Anderson, whose district includes El Cajon, states, "To say that the county is secretly using El Cajon as a dumping ground is misinformed. In the future, I believe our shared constituents would be better served if we worked together rather than through press conferences." The county press release indicates the housing vouchers come with services and case management, and that 30% of individuals exiting the voucher program have been moved into permanent housing. So where are those homeless people with vouchers in El Cajon motels from? According to the county, about 94% of them are from somewhere in East County, although that's a vast area, and roughly 63% are from El Cajon, meaning 37% are from somewhere else. But the El Cajon figure includes the unincorporated parts of El Cajon that are under county control. It's unclear just how many are actually from within the city limits. The number of homeless people in El Cajon increased 69% from January 2020 to January 2022. That's up from 775 people to 1,308, according to the Point in Town count. The county claims there has been only a slight increase in the number of voucher program participants lately, or about 10 people a week. Motels opt to participate in the voucher program on a voluntary basis. Countywide, of the 18 participating hotels or motels, 8 of them are in El Cajon, which does have the largest share. There are 4 in the city of San Diego, 2 in Escondido, 1 in Santee, and 1 in Vista, according to the county. Supervisors Anderson and Fletcher's press release says, so far, we think the county has done a great deal in helping clean up the city of El Cajon. The release cites clearing of homeless camps on Magnolia and Graves, rolling out a safe parking program, shutting down 100 illegal pot shops in the vicinity, and expanding the hotel voucher program to provide immediate shelter while working to move East County's homeless population into permanent housing. But Mayor Wells says this is not enough. He objects to El Cajon, the East County community with the most homeless people, having more homeless from other areas brought in, exacerbating problems in the city. He asks, why aren't they housed in Del Mar or La Jolla? The county gets all the money for treating the homeless, the mayor says. Then they're bringing the problems here, where our police have to deal with it, our firefighters have to deal with it, and our citizens have to deal with the problems. He concludes, at the very least, the county should be sharing the money with us. As for the city's concerns about public safety, the county release fired back, if the voucher program no longer aligns with the city's commitment to addressing the issue of homelessness from a regional approach, we have full confidence in their ability to find solutions and in their police department to ensure the residents of El Cajon are safe. To his constituents, Mayor Wells has this to say. We understand that your top priority is homelessness, adding, we're going to do everything we can and hold people accountable and not let our community be turned into a homeless encampment. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
Several families lost homes to fast-moving flames during the recent Border 32 fire, which scorched through the Barrett Junction, Dulzura, and Potrero communities in San Diego's East County. Others lost outbuildings, horses, and vehicles. Damages included wells needed for water, orchards, and more. One woman needs help to pay her dog's emergency veterinary bill. These survivors of the wildfire are now seeking help through donations at GoFundMe.com. The Grice family and their 3 children lost everything in the fire, with only about 10 minutes to grab what they could and evacuate. Kimberly's brother started a fundraiser to help the family get essentials needed right now. Christine Campbell has started a fundraiser for her father, who lost his home and everything in it in the Border 32 fire. This is a second loss to fire for the family, which lost their Bible camp on the same property back in 2008. They too need essentials while they plan to rebuild from the ground up. The Gaskins family lost not only their home, but also barns, outbuildings, and livestock, including a horse and chickens. Their well is damaged, so they have no water. Michaela Gaskins says this has been a very emotional time for my entire family. Pam McGoffin needs help to pay the medical bills for her dog Dutch, who suffered lung damage in the Border 32 fire and needed emergency care. The Quintanilla family suffered major losses, including a home and belongings, as well as a barn and sheds on the property. Another home on the site was spared, but has smoke damage to furniture and clothing. The family also had damage to a pool and a vehicle, as well as losses of food due to a power outage. They need help to move into a rental property while working to rebuild their lives. Gemma and Ryan Summers suffered major damage to their Potrero property, where fire destroyed the RV home of Ryan's uncle, Mark Summers, who had only enough time to escape with his dog and the clothes on his back. The family's well suffered major damage, leaving them without water. They also lost solar panels, tools, propane tanks, and more. Ryan fought the fire single-handedly on the family's property, where the young couple someday hopes to build an earth berm home. But for now, they need help to keep their dream alive since their losses are all uninsured. You can find links to the GoFundMe pages for all of these families in need at eastcountymagazine.org in the Wildfire News section. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Marie Johnson.
Project New Village and Thrive Lemon Grove are bringing a mobile farmers market to Lemon Grove starting on Thursday, September 29th at 2885 Lemon Grove Avenue. Project New Village is a nonprofit that runs a community garden and teaches people how to grow their own food in their own backyards. They operate several mobile farmers markets in Southeast San Diego. The mobile farmers market will be in Lemon Grove from 3 to 5 p.m. This is Christiane McCormick with KNSJ News.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region. Please support KNSJ by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org.
If your bicycle needs fixing, head down to downtown La Mesa. The city just installed a new bicycle repair station to provide basic bicycle repairs and maintenance tools to community bicyclists. The bicycle repair area is located on Allison Avenue in between City Hall and Fire Station 11, just outside the La Mesa Branch Library at 8074 Allison Avenue. This self-serve station contains tools needed to perform repairs and maintenance, such as adjusting brakes or fixing flats. It includes screwdrivers, wrenches, and hex tools. Users can also scan a QR code to access detailed instructions for various repairs. This new fix-it station for cyclists supports the city's Climate Action Plan transportation measures to expand bicycle infrastructure. It was funded through a bike grant. This is Christiane McCormick with KNSJ News.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
It sounds like the tentative agreement grants a single sick leave day, which is a bit of an insult, one would think.
Ron Kamenkow, organizer for Railroad Workers United on the tentative agreement with rail companies. It would also let workers take unpaid time off to attend medical appointments without penalty and would increase worker wages by 24% over 5 years. The deal hasn't yet been approved by the rank and file, but it could avert a crippling strike that would halt U.S. rail freight. In Minnesota, 15,000 nurses returned to work after a three-day strike, the largest on record. Minnesota Nurses Association President Mary Turner said they're suffering from burnout and pay that hasn't kept up with inflation.
We have plenty of nurses, but we have nurses that don't want to work in the conditions that are out there. And I could say this message to every nurse in every state, and they'd understand what I'm talking about.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is standing by his move to ship two plane loads of migrants, most from Venezuela, to Martha's Vineyard. Critics charge he was using refugees from communism for a careless political stunt. Senate Judiciary Chair Illinois Democrat Dick Durbin addressed growing threats to law enforcement after being briefed by the FBI and Department of Homeland Security.
It was stunning, the number of threats that have been cataloged and indexed since the August 8th search at Mar-a-Lago. We've seen some very specific and others which are generalized and address the security of each and every federal agent.
At the White House Thursday, President Joe Biden hosted the United We Stand Summit. He called for action on the hate and violence shown at the January 6th insurrection and the Charlottesville Unite the Right rally.
Nazi flags and banners chanting the bile, accompanied by white supremacists. David Dukes and his crowd, and an innocent young woman is killed. When the last guy was asked, what did he think? He said he thought there were some fine people on both sides.
Social media platforms, including YouTube and Facebook, say they are taking action to stop violence against specific groups. And in California, Governor Gavin Newsom signed online transparency legislation he says will protect against hate and disinformation. But Twitter's former head of global engineering, Alex Roeder, says he's skeptical that the algorithms will change much.
So until those incentives change, we should not expect the AI to optimize for anything other than engagement and profit maximization.
I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Local officials concerned about climate change are urging Democrats to scuttle a deal reached with West Virginia U.S. Senator Joe Manchin to pass a bill that would fast-track permitting for energy projects. Some 445 officials from across the country are asking the Democratic National Committee to support a resolution condemning the proposed bill before the DNC's summer meeting ends tomorrow. In California, Devin Murphy, mayor pro tem of Pinole, north of San Francisco, says Democratic leaders promised to support the proposal in exchange for Manchin's vote on the Inflation Reduction Act. Murphy thinks the plan runs counter to what's happening in the Golden State.
The deal that Senator Manchin made would undo many of the new gains that this legislature just enacted. So it really turns back the clock, and we can't afford that here in California.
The Inflation Reduction Act makes a historic investment of $370 billion to fight climate change over the next decade. The oil and gas industry has long argued that the permitting process and environmental reviews for new energy development on public lands are overly complex and time-consuming. But Murphy points out that by rushing the process, it gives the public less time to weigh in.
It also undermines democratic norms. The permitting reform bill also will prevent meaningful public input from those communities in the crosshairs of harmful fossil fuel projects.
The letter to the DNC also raises issues of environmental justice. It argues that the permitting bill would likely lead to more drilling sites and refineries that pollute the air, often located in lower-income communities of color. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part 2 of the East County Magazine radio show.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Welcome to the East County Magazine live radio show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today, my very special guest is Christine Alicio. She is running in hopes of becoming La Mesa's first woman mayor, challenging the current mayor, Dr. Marga Rapostathis. She is a former La Mesa City Councilwoman with a background in land use, law, business, and community service. She holds degrees in philosophy and law, and she's a La Mesa native who raised her daughter here. As a former city council member, she spearheaded some local initiatives, including term limits, the Climate Action Plan, Pension Liability Pay Down Plan, Smoke-Free La Mesa Ordinance, and an Affordable Homes Bonus Program. La Mesa, as many know, is changing from a sleepy small town, and it's now facing some of those challenges that bigger cities face. Christine says the city needs a dynamic mayor with leadership that she hopes to provide. Christine, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Miriam.
So can we start by having you tell us what your top priorities will be if you're elected mayor?
My top priorities are very simple. The government needs to serve the people. And right now, the main challenges facing La Mesa are preservation of community character, adequate police and fire, and financial issues. We have a sales tax called Prop L, which funds a huge portion of our city. And it's set to sunset in 2028, and nothing has been done or worked on about that. And that's a little scary. That's the financial thing. The other thing is preservation of neighborhood and neighborhood character. It's a big thing. You see new buildings going up all over La Mesa. Neighborhoods worried, concerned. They don't want their neighborhood to look like downtown LA. And that's a big issue. And that's where my skill set, my expertise in land use, zoning, law, all of that is just sets me apart from my opponent who just does not have that skill set. And as La Mesa changes and we're faced with these issues, we need a mayor who can react without relying on staff. We need a mayor who can be out in front of these issues.
Yeah, you're jumping into my first question, actually, was that the size and scale of development has been a huge issue in La Mesa. With, on one hand, you have a statewide push for affordable, transit-oriented housing, and you know, obviously there is a need for more housing statewide. On the other hand, as you pointed out, a lot of residents have been voicing concern about protecting the community character, and La Mesa in particular is a historic town. Preserving that historic ambiance on the other hand. So how, Christine, would you balance or prioritize these competing concerns? You know, can we do both?
They aren't necessarily competing. I also sit on the board of directors of the La Mesa Historical Society, which is now the La Mesa History Center. One thing we've been trying to get off the road is an inventory of our historic homes. That has met with pushback from either city staff or elected officials. That is a step. You inventory, you see what houses, what areas have historic resources, and that those areas should have design guidelines so that any the new construction fits with the character of the neighborhood. Right now we have basically no design guidelines in La Mesa, zero.
Yeah, I mean, well, there's it's supposed to be
and from a developer's
height limit, I was going to say, but yet there's been a lot of push to waive that and build high rises. And the issue is if you put something up, I guess the biggest example was when they tried to build Park Station and a developer wanted to put 18 stories up. Right now, there's a push for, you know, a 5-story one elsewhere. And I guess the issue that many La Masons have is it's great to say, let's preserve historic character, you know, a few blocks here or there. But if you start putting 18-story high-rises up, pretty soon you're going to see them all over.
You don't want to do that. And I think, you know, a good example of that is the proposed plan, which you covered, the Alvarado specific plan.
Right.
The people who were following it are housing advocates. They are not anti-growth people, but it's the character of the existing neighborhood, the bulk and scale of the project.
Yes.
And a lot of that is going to be within state law and our own city ordinances allowed to go higher because of the Affordable Homes Bonus Act and the state requirements on that. Mm-hmm. So that's when you really need to look at design features and design. And I am not in favor of building five stories in the village. I think that would be a tragedy, to be honest.
I like the idea of design, excuse me, clear my throat. Design guidelines is interesting, because the other thing I hear from people is, you know, if we need to have a little bit taller buildings like this, do they have to look like a prison?
A box. What I was saying is design guidelines, and it's not a bad thing. It's actually, as a developer, it's helpful to have design guidelines, because then you are not just taking a stab in the dark and hoping that the design review board will approve your project. You know what you need to build. What I view as a very good example of a nice project that was controversial at the time, but ended up being a lovely project, is the Haven, the Little Flower Haven. They did a superb job of matching the architecture, of creating a pleasing building. The concerns of the neighbors did not materialize, but we had a backup plan, which was something that I also started, which was the idea that if your neighborhood became adversely affected by too many cars, you could get a neighborhood parking permit program. Now, no one wants to go there, but that should be an option. And I was really proud of getting the council to do that in case it was a problem.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, design guidelines, having your historic resources identified, whether they be commercial or not, and making it easier for the developer, it makes it easier, promotes housing, to have clear design guidelines.
Homelessness has been growing in La Mesa and actually across our region, made even worse by the pandemic, I think. Christine, what is your plan to humanely address the homelessness problem in La Mesa?
I think right now we are doing a very good job with our current program, but what we also need to do, and it's imperative, is we need to equip our law enforcement agencies, especially our fire department, which takes up the brunt a lot of the dealing with the homeless, and they are not, the fire department's not equipped to do that. So we need to get them some help. We really do. And until there's changes at the state level regarding a person who's not down on their luck, homeless because of the pandemic, but is mentally ill or drug addicted, it's going to be very difficult for us to deal with those individuals. I encounter them on a daily basis, and it's heartbreaking when someone is talking to a building, but how do we reach that person? Or telling me that in Kentucky, there's a senator that's going to kill him because he's a Cherokee, and this is a well-known homeless individual in downtown La Mesa. And I say, you need to get to the housing. You need to get, no, I won't go because they'll make me take my drugs. And that's something that is going to need to change at the state level. In the meanwhile, we need to make sure that our law enforcement, our first responders are equipped to deal with them, with homelessness, and especially for the people who fall into that category of mentally ill and drug addicted.
Yeah, we should say the state is pushing forward a plan.
Yes, the CARE
Do you support that, the CARE Court plan that Governor Newsom actually is pushing forward?
Yes, it's actually a good step in the first direction. But in the meanwhile, we need to have adequate response to this. So if a business owner has a homeless person sitting there defecating on their property, doing this, that person needs to be moved off the street, given a ticket, so that it's not welcoming for them. In essence, you're forcing them to make positive changes in their life, to maybe get back on their medication, get helps for drug and alcohol. And it's tragic. And in the meanwhile, the people who are homeless because they have lost their jobs, they've had a fight with their husband, their, you know, moms and children, we need to continue to provide services for them.
What about shelter? I know there was a controversy a couple of years ago where there was a proposal for one and it got shot down. It was going to include not just La Mesa homeless, but some coming from other areas. El Cajon's mayor held a press conference yesterday complaining about the county converting motels to house the homeless temporarily out there. And his major complaint was that some of these homeless weren't from El Cajon. They were coming in from other areas. And El Cajon is saying, why aren't the cities of Santee, La Mesa, Lemon Grove, setting up shelters, at least for some of their own homeless. Is that something that La Mesa should consider doing in partnership with the county, perhaps, to at least take care of some of its own?
Our homeless population in La Mesa, when you count, does not warrant building a shelter.
Okay. Moving on, La Mesa has seen racial justice protests, including that devastating riot that was fueled in part by actions of a La Mesa police officer who's since been dismissed. You've said you want to increase the city's police force to respond faster to calls. You also drew a bit of criticism after the riot for voicing support for certain groups like Defend East County that were formed ostensibly to protect the merchants, but later got involved in some controversial actions of their own. So, Christine, how would you approach improving public safety while also, do you think we need to do more to address the racial tensions that were the root causes of these conflicts to begin with?
I think that the police department has done an excellent job of addressing that. And I think that I'm in La Mesa every day. I shop, I play, I work. I'm always in La Mesa. And to be honest, I don't see a lot of racial tensions between the residents.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
so you think the plan that the police rolled out, the reform plan that they've been implementing,
yes, and you have to be careful. And no one wants to be pulled over because of the color of their skin. No one should be, and we cannot allow that. Mm-hmm. And it just can't be. And as mayor, another thing that the mayor can do and needs to do, and I remember after the Helix High School incident a few years ago,
For those who may not know what that is, an officer.
It was the
video.
Yes.
Yeah. With
there were two council members mm-hmm. who met with the concerned citizens. Two, not the current mayor, not the other council members. One was council member Parent, and the other was me. So, as mayor, you need to get out there, talk to the people.
Yeah.
You don't have staff do it. Don't have the police do it. You yourself go do it. You say, okay, you feel like the police are treating you bad, or you feel there's a climate that is making you feel threatened. The mayor needs to get out there and talk, and I'll do it.
Yeah. Mayor Rapostathos is a full-time teacher. So it's a very different style than say when Art Madrid was there, where he made mayor full-time, probably double full-time job.
And that's true.
But I should ask about what is your time availability compared to say those two past models that we've seen in La Mesa?
I am very fortunate that my primary thing that I do is able to be done on computers and other things. So my time availability and my promise to the people of La Mesa is I'm going to have one day a week where open office hours, you don't need an appointment, you get me. If you're having a problem in your neighborhood, you're upset by something, you come in. It's not staff, you don't need an appointment, come talk to me. I want to solve the problem. I'm not going to hide behind staff. I'm not going to hide behind the city manager. I want to be, so in that model, more like Art Madrid, open, accessible. And if I have to give 40 hours a week to this, I will.
Very good. Yeah, I one of my questions was going to be that you pledged to increase public engagement with the city leaders. How would you do that? I think you just answered it, unless there's anything else you want to
add. Yeah, it's and there are going to be people who are going to come in and they're going to be angry at me, angry at the city. And that's okay, because that's what I'm there for, to listen. Mm-hmm. And that's what the mayor needs to be doing. I mean, if someone comes in and they're mad about a development, or they're mad about something, an incident that's happened, or they're mad at the police, or they're mad at the building department, and they start hollering at me, that's fine. I'd rather be hollered at, be yelled at, or be complimented, but for them. You need a face, you need a person, and that's me.
With your background in planning, Christine, you've talked a lot about wanting to improve the efficiency in the city's planning department. How would you do that?
I think, like going back to, say, design guidelines that are easy to follow, everyone knows what they are, the neighbors know, the developer knows, we need to have guidelines within the planning department itself, which makes it easy. So there's no, the staff needs to have it be so clear that when someone calls and they say, what's happening with my permit? And the staff person goes, well, I'm not sure, I guess it's okay. But I'm going to have to ask someone else. Well, no, you don't do that. You say, if it meets XYZ requirements, go for it. And you give the staff some latitude to interpret that in favor of the applicant. Too many of our residents and businesses are sitting there, the Historical Society. We have a new sign with our rebranding. It's been in the queue, same size, same location for months now. That's not acceptable. Yeah. If I need to remodel my bathroom because my mom is moving in with me and it needs to be handicap accessible, it cannot, it is not right that should take 6 months to a year. If I want to build an ADU, either for income or so that my family member, maybe a child is moving back home or a cat,
we can talk about those cats in a minute.
Happening fast, not 3 years, not 1 year. It needs streamlining. And duh, this is the negative about Zoom.
For those that are hearing this on radio, there's a cat running behind me.
Yes, there are two cats running behind me.
Okay.
Oh,
that's okay.
Dear.
So she's an animal lover.
Yes. And so that, you know, it's simple. It's having the legal knowledge of the land use process combined with the practical knowledge of working in the industry gives me so many ideas of how to make things easier for people, how to make government work for them.
Okay. Your ambitious agenda includes more street repairs, cleaning up the public right-of-ways, as we've mentioned, hiring more police officers, also providing firefighters with yes. smaller, more efficient vehicles to respond faster to calls. All seem like admirable goals. You've also said you oppose new taxes, and you've alluded to this kind of looming financial issue. So, Christine, it begs the question of how would you pay for the programs you want to implement?
There are a few things that you can do right here and now. One is we have Prop U, the marijuana tax.
Oh,
that is just going into the general fund, $500,000 a year. It's mm-hmm. not being allocated for anything in specific. Uh-huh. You take it, it's already here. It's not a new tax. It's not anything. You
right.
take it and you start spending it on those issues. It's that simple. It really is. And that tax will only increase as time goes on. And if you look at, I know you and I have talked about this and I pointed out to the city's open gov, it's there. And so parking it in the general fund without allocation to either streets, police, public right-of-way cleanup, firefighters, that's just not acceptable. So no taxes that have to do with grand schemes to build transit in North County. But here in La Mesa, we have taxes. We just need to utilize them more effectively.
Okay. La Mesa is unusual in that they've seemed to have had a tradition in recent years of elected officials who've changed political parties. It's happened both ways, Democrat to Republican, Republican to Democrat, independent, I mean, you name it. And often they're still winning re-elections since the city's voters seem to have an independent streak, voting for the person maybe or the issue, not so much the D or the R after the name. Christine, you left the Republican Party a few years ago and became an independent. And recently you rejoined it and you're now actually endorsed by the San Diego County Republican Party. Can you explain to voters your reasons for those shifts and also if there's any other endorsements you're proud of that you'd like folks to know about?
Yes, I can explain that. I was very pleased with the Republican Party until we had a parting of the ways on national issues. And I was not pleased with the way the local party responded. However, watching and coming back to the party, I realized the Republican Party is more like me. They are the party of the working people, the average person. And as we see the shift in the Republican Party to recognize that.
Well, I mean, I have to say Democrats are generally pro-union, pro-working people
yes,
in that sense.
Generally.
So is it a little
but as we look at the differences, what the Republican Party today is prioritizing, take all the national issues out, it is pro-business, that's a huge thing. Pro-small business, mm-hmm. that sort of thing True. Is something that I absolutely believe in, having worked in the private sector my entire life, having never done anything but that. And so I feel that the Republican Party is definitely becoming much more diverse, and they identify with, you know, they're gaining in all sorts of realms. Hispanics are going to the Republican Party. People of color are, because these are, it's almost like a shift from the Democratic Party of the 50s, which was the for the workers' people, the working class, to the Republican Party of 2022. And so that's why I'm back in the Republican Party.
Okay. As we noted, with those lovely cats running past in the background, Christine, you run a cat rescue organization.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, beautiful Bengal cats, right?
Savannah cats.
Savannah cats, yeah, gorgeous animals. So are we going to see a mascot cat for La Mesa?
I hope we have a cat mascot. I would love to have a cat mascot, but the cat mascot also needs to have a dog companion. It can't just be a cat mascot.
Okay.
No, the official cat and dog of La Mesa, both of them, and maybe even a ferret.
La Mesa is like a sanctuary city for ferrets or something.
Yes, it is. A ferret, cat, a dog. You speak about pets. That's other things that I was proud of when I was on the council, is getting rid of chickens. You can have backyard chickens in La Mesa. My God, that was scary way back when. One of my initiatives, changing the limit laws on animals so that people can respond who want to have three dogs. You can have three dogs now. It increases adoptions. It's great. And you mentioned other endorsements. Mm-hmm. I am very proud to be endorsed by the Heartland Firefighters of La Mesa.
Okay.
This probably seems surprising to some people, the Carpenters Local 619.
There you go, a union.
And the Legion Club of San Diego County.
Okay, pro-business group.
Yeah, so it's kind of, you know, it's business. I'm your working class candidate. I'm the crazy cat lady who wants to help the people, the residents of La Mesa, who's not afraid of controversy, and will fight and be accessible for you, the people of La Mesa, and businesses of La Mesa.
There you go. Well, as a longtime La Mesa resident native myself, I'm watching this race very carefully with a lot of interest. Christine, I'm going to let you have the final say today, but what else would you like people to know about you and your candidacy for mayor of La Mesa? And also, where can they find more information about your candidacy?
What I'd like people to know is that my phone is ringing, I'm sorry. What I want people to know is that I am like you. I'm just a normal person, a divorced woman who raised her child in La Mesa, basically almost as a single mother, and do volunteer work, do community work, and listen to everyone. Everyone deserves respect in this city. Everyone deserves a voice. And as mayor, that is what I will provide you, no matter what political party you're in, no matter what anything you are. You will get a mayor that works for you and is there for you. No hiding behind closed doors, no hiding behind staff. You'll just get me, plain and simple. If anyone has any questions, this is my personal cell phone number. Call me, text me. 619-806-4058. I'll say it again, 619-806-4058. I may not return your call super fast or your text, but if I will do it, I mean, within hours, unless you're texting me in the middle of the night, then maybe not.
Maybe not. Yeah.
You can look at my website, which is www.christinealicio.com, and check out what I have to say. You can email me, my personal email, kckssa@cox.net. I am here for La Mesa residents, La Mesa businesses, and La Mesa.
Very good. Well, Christine, I want to thank you for taking the time to join us here on the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso.
Thank you.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Tragic stories have emerged during local wildfires of livestock that perished not from flames, but from lack of food, water, or medical care. Farmers may also lose crops due to lack of irrigation. The situation has led some ranchers and farmers to risk their lives by not evacuating during wildfires, knowing that they would not be allowed back in to care for their animals or crops. That's about to change. Last Tuesday, county supervisors voted to approve issuing an agricultural pass, AG pass, that will allow a farmer or rancher limited access to their land in evacuated areas during emergencies to care for livestock or crops during emergencies, once emergency responders deem conditions safe. The program comes too late for those evacuated from the Border 32 fire that threatened Barrett Junction, Dulcura, Potrero, and Tecate last week. Some residents posted frantic messages on social media seeking help for animals trapped inside the evacuation area after volunteers with horse trailers were denied access and some horses died. The new program would not help volunteers gain entry, but would allow commercial ranchers and farmers or their managers who undergo safety training to be allowed limited access in future emergencies. The plan was proposed by East County Supervisors Joel Anderson and Jim Desmond. Supervisor Anderson says the AG passes will help eliminate the dilemma many farmers and ranchers must face during natural disasters, to leave behind their animals, putting their livestock and equine at risk, or to ignore evacuation orders, putting their own lives at risk. He adds, this measure gives ranchers an opportunity for timely access to their ranches during what is an incredibly stressful and often life or death situation. And he voiced thanks to county staff for creating the program he hopes will save many lives. Supervisor Desmond notes that agriculture provides over 12,000 jobs and has an economic impact of just under $2 billion in San Diego County. He says, having this AG pass available to our farmers will allow for a better collaboration with firefighters and will ultimately make our community safer. The county begins accepting applications for commercial cattle and equine operations starting September 6th. The county will add AG passes for other commercial livestock and agricultural operations in fiscal year 2023-24. Tony Meacham, San Diego County Fire and CAL FIRE Chief, spoke at the supervisors' meeting to remind everyone with animals to have an evacuation plan before a wildfire occurs. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
This is Connie Beck with Ready, Set, Grow. I'm going to help you create healthy and beautiful gardens using less money, less hard work, and much more fun. Hi, this is Connie again, and I'm talking to you about what you should be thinking about planting now. And in another couple of weeks, you better not be thinking about it. You better be doing it. So what do we start with in the fall? You think green. Think of all those greens that you love to eat, because this is the time to get them in the ground. Asian greens, mustard greens, spinach, and my favorite, beet greens. Except you get a double payoff with beets. In fact, you get about a 5 or 6 payoff with beets, because every little beet seed that you are planting actually is an old dried up flower, and it contains 5 or 6 seeds in it. So when those beets come up, you've probably wondered in the past, why, if I only planted one beet there, do I have 5 little plants there? What you can do is wait until they get to be about 2 inches tall, and then using your very most delicate touch, wet the soil and carefully, using your fingers on the leaves, pull out those extras. Leave the biggest one in place, pull the others, and immediately replant them 3 or 4 inches away from the mother plant, or start another row, but get them a ways away from each other so that they will each have room to grow. As they grow, you can enjoy pulling off an occasional big leaf and stir-frying it or cooking it up, braising it in a pan. They're my favorite greens, like I said. Eventually, much later, you will end up with full-grown beet roots that you can pull out and cook. So now's the time to start your beets. What else can you start now? Broccoli, everything in the cabbage family, kale plants,
pull the old ones from last year that are dried up over the summer, get some new kale going. You can start cilantro now, and you will have to replant it again in about 2 months because cilantro doesn't last forever. It goes to flower too soon. But at this time of year, with the cooler days and nights, it takes longer for it to bolt into flower. So cilantro is a great thing to grow right now. Right now, I just started my peas. I use Chinese edible pod peas, but any kind of peas can be started now. What you want to do is soak those seeds overnight or even for 48 hours and then plant them. Poke them into wet soil, get them down about an inch or so, inch and a half, cover them well. And I want to mention when all these seeds that you plant, the smaller the seed, the closer to the surface you plant it. And always press down hard. Annie's Annuals up in Richmond is run by a delightful woman who talks about how she started her first batch of annual plants. She planted them outdoors in flats. The seed flats were right there. She was so upset because her cat ran across the seed flats when she was through planting them. What happened was those were the only seeds that came up. So that was a lesson to her, and it's a lesson to all of us. Press down on the soil after your seeds are in the ground so you have good contact as well as the moisture, so things will start early. You can grow radishes year-round. You can start scallions and green onions right now. Swiss chard, I would suggest that you get that in the ground right away, hopefully by the 1st of October, because Swiss chard likes the warm soil to start. In fact, all of these seeds like the warm soil to start, and then they appreciate the cooler days as they grow and get larger.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region. Please support KNSJ by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, AK Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show. This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.